The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
a beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
Dodging Black Friday, but eagerly awaiting Cyber Monday, I am Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our humble techery bunker. We're already in line for Cyber Monday.
That's right. We've been camping out for months.
Yeah.
We're going to be first when they open the doors on Cyber Monday. We'll be there.
Oh, I'll be asleep. What am I saying?
Well, welcome. Today, as we record this, it's November the 25th of 2012, a couple of days removed from the American holiday of Thanksgiving, and, of course, less than 30 days from the end of the world as we know it.
It's the end of the world.
And we feel fine because the Mayans said no such thing. That was R.E.M.
Ah, yes.
From about 1986.
Ah, yes.
86 or 87.
And, of course, neither one of us really believes that the world is going to end.
No.
In no way, shape, or form will it end on December 2012. It's just not going to.
In fact, doing a search for an article, because I saw a headline here within the last few days that people are converging on Guatemala City in mid-December, just in case the Mayans were right. But the descendants of the Mayans themselves, who live in and around Guatemala, you know, Central America, are kind of cheesed that New Agers have twisted the calendar of the Mayans to into some sort of cataclysmic apocalyptic prophecy.
Well, everything I have read about that calendar indicates that it is simply the beginning of the next counting.
Yeah. There was a wonderful cartoon.
The next cartoon.
Wonderful cartoon, and I don't think it was Gary Larson's Far Side, because he stopped writing that some time ago. But it was something similar to that, in which you saw a couple of Mayans and one fellow standing there with the big stone wheel on which they recorded their calendar, and saying to the other guy, "Well, we ran out of space here in December 2012," and the other guy says, "I'll just leave it. That'll really freak him out." So. And that's kind of what we come down to. But sadly, there are those who have taken this seriously and are looking for something to happen. We've talked about this many times. And we just refer you to Chris White's debunkumentary, 2012 Debunked, for a kind of review of the major claims made by those who believe there's something to it. And then a dismantling, pretty thorough dismantling of those arguments.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Because it has become such a well-known meme, we'll call it that. This idea that the world is going to change radically. I won't say end, but change radically. New Agers think that somehow that's when we all get upgraded.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, of course, those Christians who are, lowbrow and well, idiots.
Standing in the way.
Yeah. Standing in the way. They're ate up, they say. Of course, we Christians know good and well that there's much to come. Mm-hmm. We have at least another 1,000 years with the earth as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
And following the 1,000-year reign of Jesus Christ, when he does return, will be a new heaven and a new earth.
Yeah.
That will be the end of this old earth. But at least another 1,000. At least another 1,007.
Yeah. And it could be, right. At least. And it could be considerably longer than that. I mean, look back at the Bible and you see that the Apostle Paul was writing to churches who thought that they'd missed it. The Thessalonians, mm-hmm. in particular,
yep.
thought that they'd missed Christ's return and were very upset. So
well,
they considered his return to be imminent.
Time to the Lord means nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He's eternal. You know, we are very much time oriented and linear in our thoughts,
mm-hmm.
but time is it's as Doctor Who says, timey wimey, wibbly wobbly.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Or as Steve Miller once said, keeps on slipping into the future.
It does. And see, much of what we said is in the past now.
Yeah.
Because it was so 10 minutes ago. Well, Well, let's get to headlines. There's lots going on. We aren't to December 21 yet. And, you know, you and I should actually do a show on December 21.
We should
do a live show.
Absolutely.
We should look into that.
But speaking of numerology, and this is something, and I should point out, but by the time you hear this, there will be a new View from the Bunker interview as well, online as well at vftb.net, and had the opportunity and the honor to talk with Dr. Mike Heiser for the first time in probably 2 years. We were still living back in Shelbyville, next to last bunker.
It had been way too long.
Right. But he's been a very busy guy. He's been working on his nonfiction book, which is now available as a PDF at his website, DRMSH, you know, Dr. MSH, DRMSH.com. The Myth That Is True is the name of the nonfiction work that he's been writing for the last 2 or 3 years as a first draft, an edited first draft. So you get it in a PDF form looking like a book layout, which, by the way, you can read on your Kindle if you've got a Kindle or the Kindle app on your computer. He's just re-released a new special edition of his novel, The Facade, which was first published in 2000. And I think the timing of that is perfect because The Facade is all about the use of the extraterrestrial meme as a means to change the worldview, and particularly the theology of Christians, but to change the theology of the world away from the gospel message. So that was a really good discussion. And we talked about this sort of fascination with apocalyptic prophecy and the idea that we are somehow responsible for what is going to happen in the heavenly realm in the near future.
You back up? How are we responsible for what happens in the heavenly realm?
Well, we aren't, and that's the whole point. But the New Agers believe that by obtaining certain knowledge, just like the ancient Gnostics, that we can transform, and that we backwards, ignorant Christians are holding back the advancement of humanity
Luddites.
To the next level, right? Spiritual Luddites. You kind of hold a mirror up to, and by the way, that's what the occult realm is all about too. You know, as above, so below, trying to do things through certain rituals or acts that will unlock some
open
spiritual
gateways.
Portals, perhaps, mm-hmm. Gateways. And in the biblical UFO phenomenon, we probably are familiar, most of you are probably familiar with the Babylon working undertaken by Jack Parsons, who founded the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, JPL, and L. Ron Hubbard of Dianetics and later the Church of Scientology fame. Under the guidance and direction, more or less, of Aleister Crowley. And Mike's argument was that we give human actors too much credit for the influence that we have on the spiritual realm. But the sad thing is when you kind of hold a mirror up to that sort of activity, you see a lot of that going on inside so-called Christian circles as well,
mm-hmm.
Especially within the new Signs and Wonders movement, the sort of the radical fringe of Pentecostal charismatic movement is what I was trying to think of. And there's another date coming up about 9 days before the Mayan calendar runs out on 12/12/12. We see this fascination with numerology and with the opening of portals in this charismatic movement as well. 12/12/12 has been designated as God Day by a group in Orlando, and they are apparently they believe that there's some spiritual or significance in the numerological connection to 12/12/12. But as Sandy Simpson, who is a discernment a minister of discernment, online discernment minister, has pointed out, this has been going on for years now with all kinds of New Age date setting on 333. Ted Haggard sent out an email to his church, the New Life Church in Colorado Springs at the time, to pray, asking people to set aside 3 minutes at 333 p.m. on 33 of 03. Then there was a 6606, 777, and 888, and 999. Essentially, every year when this comes around, it seems, there's another call within that new apostolic revival or reformation movement to do something as though there's some special day or some special significance to the numerology connected to that certain day. And again, if you do a little digging at all into the signs and wonders movement, you'll see a rather disturbing consistency in how often they call for prayer to unlock gateways or open spiritual portals, as though God is just sort of sitting up there. And again, Mike kind of addressed this as sort of what he called a cartoon theology or cartoonish theology or cartoonish demonology, as though God was sitting up there waiting for us to do something before he can act. It's like, well, I could have really helped you there, but your timing was off on your clock by about 4 minutes. You prayed at 3:37 instead of 3:33, so sorry, can't help you. That's not how it works.
But it's the same idea for dominionists who claim that Jesus essentially is waiting for us to evangelize the nations.
Exactly.
And I mean literally the nations, not the people, the nations. And only then will he return. And there are even those who believe, not just in Christian circles, but some within secret society circles, that the third temple has to be rebuilt in order for him to return, as if he is incapable of returning until we do these things.
Yep. Now, we're not saying that there is no efficacy to prayer. There clearly is. The Bible tells us there is. But God is not a genie inside a lamp that you can rub in a certain way in order to get your every wish and desire. And frankly, I think if you look back at the history of all of these events over the last dozen years or so, and even longer, of these gatherings, like the call, Lou Engel's The Call, which had been uncertain of these dates, again, the numerologically significant dates, to tear down the strongholds of the enemy, the spiritual powers and principalities that hold sway over our cities and our nation. If there was any efficacy to those events at all, certainly we would see the morality of the United States going the opposite direction from the way it's going now, which is clearly to hell in a handbasket. So anyway, I don't want to beat.
And if you want to save on those handbaskets,
that's right. We got a special
line up now for Cyber Monday. It's been a while, frankly, since we had a PID radio there,
right.
And there are many things that have happened between this one and the last one. One story that I want to make sure that we talk about is related a little bit to what you've just been discussing, and that is this notion that there are groups that have insider information.
Right.
We know that if we do the following things, that we can manifest God here on Earth. There was a story out on November 12th. Was it the original story, November 12th? Around that time, November 12th, 13th, a story about a Bible student named Bethany Ann Deaton.
Oh, yes.
This was part of the Kansas City IHOP church, an offshoot of that, the International, not House of Pancakes, but the House of Prayer.
Right.
At the time that the story came out, they were disavowing any connection whatsoever with the Deatons. However, at the time that I was looking at this story a couple of weeks ago, it was pretty clear that they were, that Micah Moore, who is the confessed murderer of Bethany Deaton, was one of the helpers at a local IHOP church there in Kansas City. And his pastor, Bethany Deaton's husband, Tyler, was also listed. Now, those disappeared within 48 hours of the publication of this story. Those things disappeared from the website. But there are those who say they've got screen caps. I personally don't have one. So I do think that there is at least a small connection with the IHOP church in Kansas City. Tyler Deaton, if you haven't read this story, we'll link to it. It is very disturbing.
Yeah, it is.
He apparently was a control freak. This was a sort of a commune house church that had a lot of men and one woman, 27-year-old Bethany Ann Deaton, who had just married Tyler. They had just gotten married, and there are this is the kind of story that, frankly, yellow journalists love. They salivate over these kind of stories because it's got preachers who have turned bad, secret, you know, things going on within, behind closed doors, people that appear to be upright and righteous when, in fact, behind the closed doors, not only are they engaging in all sorts of sexual perversity, but they actually kill this woman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not Micah Moore, who is the confessed murderer, actually committed the murder personally, it's hard to say. He was definitely under the sway of the husband.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
And he claims that Tyler Deaton put him up to the murder. Micah Moore is 23. He claims that Tyler Deaton was using sex, and specifically sex with his wife, Bethany Deaton, as part of its religious mission. That's how it's being reported by...
And apparently there was more than heterosexual activity going on, that there were other activities between the men as part of their worship. I mean, this is really, really sick stuff. Just found a story that a couple of days after this, like I said, the IHOP church, the actual main body, said that the name of the leaders list, Tyler Deaton's name appearing on their list of leaders, was an error. Mm-hmm. And that's why they took it down. Yeah.
Well, Deaton and his group in Kansas City met in Texas, and they actually followed him from Texas to Kansas City so that they could link up with the International House of Prayer. The president of IHOP in Kansas City, Alan Hood, released a statement saying that Deaton was operating independently of IHOP, that they really had nothing to do with the Kansas City-based organization.
Well, that's entirely possible. I am not, just to make my position clear, I really am not saying that the main body organization, which has problems all its own, we won't go into, but that the main body, that they really are behind what happened, that they sanctioned this in any way. I don't think that at all.
Uh-uh.
I think this is a sick bunch of people who were impressionable and that, frankly, that the leader, Tyler, was almost a Jim Jones.
I think that's a good way of putting it.
A Svengali character.
Right. According to Micah Moore, he turned himself into police and told detectives that he and other men in this group, under Deaton's direction, committed sexual assaults on Bethany Deaton, who'd been given Seroquel, which is a prescription antipsychotic. Moore said that he was told to kill Bethany Deaton because there was fear within the group that she was about to reveal to her therapist activity in the house that Moore and others described as sexual assault. The men in the group had also engaged in sex with Tyler Deaton, according to court documents. The Bethany Deaton's connection to the International House of Prayer was that she served as an intern for 6 months in 2009. She'd been working as a nurse in Overland Park in the meanwhile. And
were they not students at the school? The IHOP has a college.
Don't know. Bethany graduated, and I believe Tyler did as well, from Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas, which is where they met. And again, traveled from Texas to Kansas City to, again, link up with the International House of Prayer. So, again, not saying that IHOP is any culpability in this at all. Deaton, Tyler Deaton, was operating his own homebrew cult, which
happened to be springboarded out of the IHOP cult.
Yeah. So a real disturbing development in the Kansas City area, and sadly, what appears to be a very intelligent and engaging young woman. I mean, she graduated from college with honors. Her life has come to an early end. And you're right. This is the kind of thing that yellow journalism, and probably Dick Wolf, the guy who produces Law and Order, is just salivating over because
this is
a ready-made script for one of the Law and Order franchises. I'm sure that'll pop up here in the 2013 season.
Yeah.
There are a lot of stories that you read about in the news like this that will eventually show up as a CSI or a Law and Order episode, and especially Law and Order. They're kind of infamous for this kind of thing. But Yeah, really tragic. Micah Moore, again, telling police there that he was ordered to kill her and make it look like a suicide because Tyler Deaton and others in the group were afraid that Bethany Deaton was about to tell her therapist about how she was being used essentially as a sex toy by this cult.
Yeah.
So, the enemy using, once again, a desire to serve the Lord, to not only tear apart those who are genuinely faithful, but also, certainly this is not going to look well or reflect well on those who do follow Jesus Christ.
I think it's another reason to make sure that when you are teaching your children, you teach them, you ground them in Scripture in a way that they are rock solid on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the winds of the enemy are going to try very hard to blow them down.
Yeah. So, a disturbing story out of Kansas City there. The Middle East continues to be a seething, simmering cauldron.
Cup of trembling?
A cup of trembling, if you will. The Jerusalem Post is reporting that that satellites, and this is information given to them by someone in the Israeli military, and certainly the you wonder, whenever we hear a news story, read a news story, the questions to ask, first of all, is the information, does it appear accurate? And secondly, why did this information make it to the press? And presumably, if the Israelis have the capability to look down from satellites and see what the Iranians are doing, it's not something that is routinely reported to the press, I wouldn't think. So there's got to be a reason. I mean, it's question number two then is, why did this information make it into the press?
Why now?
Yeah, right. There is a ceasefire, a very tenuous ceasefire, as we record this, between Israel and Hamas in the Gaza Strip. But what the Jerusalem Post is reporting is that satellites are showing the Israeli military that Iran is in the process of rearming Hamas, apparently rearming Hamas, new missiles to be shipped via Sudan and into the Gaza Strip. With the Israelis all but ready to just order a ground assault into Gaza, it looks like the Iranians are trying to provoke something, perhaps?
Ratchet up the violence?
Ratchet up the violence. There was an article that I thought I'd saved about how in 2010 we were much closer to war in the Middle East than we thought, and that in fact the Israeli government in 2010 was trying to...
Was that the war on Lebanon?
Instigate. No, they were trying to draw Iran into a war with a deliberate instigation. And at the same time that was happening, apparently the United States lost command of its nuclear... lost control over its nuclear weapons because of a software glitch.
Yes.
Let me see if I can bring that up here. I saw this yesterday, and then we opted not to do the show yesterday.
Okay, we've been lazy. We've been actually enjoying some family time together.
Yeah, here we go.
Nicole was over here on Thanksgiving.
An article, and this was just posted a week ago by antiwar.com. And, of course, antiwar.com, given the name, is pretty clear they've got a certain spin on the news, certain analysis and agenda. But according to the article, in 2010, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu aimed to provoke Iran into a war with Israel that would eventually drag in the United States. The author of the article at... What is this? AL Monitor? Al Monitor? Is it like an Arabic or Islamic version of the Christian Science Monitor? I don't know. Anyway, the author of the original article, which is cited by antiwar.com, acknowledges that Netanyahu was not planning to launch an all-out attack in Iran in 2010, but rather to provoke Iran into striking first. And thankfully, that did not happen, but the fact that it was under consideration probably should not come as a surprise to us in the United States, seeing as how, declassified documents from our own government show that, Operation Northwoods, that the United States has engaged in a similar thing, trying to provoke someone else into an attack so that we could claim the moral high ground and go in and blast them back into the Stone Age. Operation Northwoods, if you're not familiar, was a a series of proposals considered by the Joint Chiefs of Staff under President Eisenhower. One of the proposals being considered was shooting down an American passenger airliner with an American fighter jet painted with Cuban colors to make it appear as though Castro's Cuba had shot down an American airliner, thus justifying a war to go in and you know, take the island back, make it safe for casinos again, apparently. That is, you know, news that has just now been reported within the last few weeks here in the United States, that Israel was apparently attempting to start something.
I have my
yes,
hand
Mrs.
Out.
Gilbert.
I was asking my friend over here, Mr. Gilbert, if the story that supposedly that guy, that the Palestinian leader guy, who's dead.
Yasser Arafat?
Yeah, and who's being exhumed.
Uh-huh, yeah.
To look for polonium poisoning.
Right,
if
right,
indeed
right.
they find that he was poisoned, I wonder
who's
going to
get blamed for it.
Blamed.
Yeah. Polonium is that radioactive element that was used to poison that Russian spy. Alexander Litvinenko, right. Several years back.
And
we
it was
about
really
that.
Obvious
about
that he was
ago.
Dying of polonium poisoning
right,
because he lost
right.
his hair.
Mm-hmm.
So did that happen to Arafat?
Don't
Is that
know.
Why they're suspecting that?
Don't know. But apparently there are enough people who believe that Yasser Arafat's death was not of natural causes. There was even some speculation that Arafat died of AIDS.
I've seen that. In fact, I saw that right after he died.
Yeah. So anyway, there's that. J-Post reporting that Iran is moving missiles and will attempt to rearm Hamas in the Gaza Strip. And by the way, this idea, the report that they would do it through Sudan is interesting because you may just remember a couple of years ago there was an explosion in a Sudanese small arms and ammunition factory was destroyed. And Sudan blamed it on an Israeli airstrike. Now, the Israelis, as far as I know, never officially took responsibility for it, but the Sudanese government at least claimed that they did. And if those arms were being transshipped through Sudan to the Gaza Strip, one can understand why the Israelis would take that kind of a step. Certainly if we were being droned or missiled from Mexico or Canada on a regular basis, I'm pretty sure the United States would take steps to put a stop to it.
Not on Black Friday.
Also in Turkey, it's reported that the Turks have requested Patriot missile batteries for its border with Syria.
From the United States? Because someone
from
else
the
makes
EU.
Those.
From NATO.
I was going to say, yeah.
This would effectively create a no-fly zone over much of Syria without having to go to the UN Security Council and get approval from the Security Council because the Russians would veto a no-fly zone over Syria.
Apparently Syria is condemning that request.
Mm-hmm.
Not surprisingly.
Yeah. So there is that. There is a report from, that's from blacklistednews.com, and not sure about the credibility here, but they do link to a couple of articles from Getty Images, G-E-T-T-Y, Getty Images, showing gunmen on the Syrian side of the Turkish border, and these gunmen are standing above a banner that's been rolled over the side of the building, you know, from the roof. And according to the caption, this group is called the Committee for Promotion of Virtues and Prevention of Vice.
Let me just stop you just for a second. And anytime I see a photo with a banner or people carrying placards. Hey, is it in English, and why is it in English? But even
well,
if it's
this
in,
is not in
well,
English,
even
this is in
if
Arabic,
it's in
right.
Arabic, I can Photoshop that stuff in and make it look like Israel.
Mm-hmm.
If I can do it, almost anybody could do it. So, and I would like to see video. I find video more compelling.
Mm.
So,
yeah,
probably true, but just to stop and say a picture doesn't necessarily prove it.
Well, that's very true. As we've seen in recent years, stories about Reuters. During the Lebanon War, when Israel went into Lebanon and the ground assault, and they were magnifying the amount of smoke rising over the horizon by
and it was so doing obvious it, so if obvious you really looked it, at yeah, it.
Doing,
yeah.
doing a copy and paste.
Well, but there was also
these Getty images, by the way, reported by the French press agency AFP, mm-hmm. And the contention is that this Committee for the Prevention of Vice and Promotion of Virtues or whatever is actually an Al Qaeda linked group, and with the implication being that that is the Syrian opposition that we in the United States are funding.
Well, that's been the meme for the last couple of months, that it's Al-Qaeda in Syria.
Right.
In fact, Hillary Clinton has been saying that.
Yeah. But at the same time, we're still all on board with getting rid of Assad, even if it means getting into bed with Al-Qaeda. Just like in Libya with, getting rid of Muammar Gaddafi.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went and killed our ambassador. Or a group within Libya went and killed our ambassador. So that is another factor to consider. You know, who is going to take over if and when Bashar Assad ever loses control and is thrown from power. There's an article out today, a news report today, that the insurgents in Syria have captured a helicopter base just outside Damascus.
Yeah, I was just reading that too.
Right. So there is that. And then in Egypt, you've got the new president there, Mohamed Morsi, issuing a decree that exempts all of his decrees from judicial review.
Okay. It's good to be the king, isn't it?
It is. Now, as I understand it, this would only be until a new constitution is drawn up, but still.
Funny thing is, he has to meet with the judicial council to defend that temporary decree.
Mm.
So, by definition, they are reviewing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see how long that goes. I just think it's kind of... It's not very amusing for the people who actually live there, but kind of amusing that this was the freedom that American progressives thought was going to be take root in Egypt as soon as we got rid of that nasty old Hosni Mubarak. So yeah, now we've got.
I remember when you and I were speaking as the Arab Spring was happening last year, and the claim that the Muslim Brotherhood was mm-hmm. nothing more than a bunch of civic-minded, gentlemen yeah. who wanted nothing more than to help businesses
That's
prosper.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Let's make a difference. Yeah. But that may be part of it, though, actually doing business. It could be that American elites believe they have a better chance of doing business with the Muslim Brotherhood than with, other elements.
Everything you need to know about politics you can learn by watching The Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're
and,
not
and House of Cards.
Well, yes, exactly. Yeah. In other words, the military industrial complex. You will do whatever you have to get your way. Sadly, that's what goes on every day.
And sadly, these changes that have taken place in the Middle East, in Libya and Egypt, and now perhaps in Syria, make more sense if you start viewing this through the lens of guys like Dave Emery, the researcher who hosts his own podcast and has done for years and years now. His analysis tends to see a Nazi behind every rock. He believes that the underground Reich is responsible for much of what's happened in the United States over the last 50 or 60 years. But I think... his theories, which he documents with, references to a lot of articles. In fact, many of his podcasts, a good portion of the podcast is spent reading the sources that he uses to back up his claims. And they're basically mainstream sources. So, he is a fairly careful researcher. I'm not sure that there's a Nazi everywhere or behind every rock, but the idea that we would support a Muslim Brotherhood government in Egypt and, get rid of Muammar Gaddafi and allow a more radical Islamic regime to take hold in Libya makes more sense if you accept that maybe Dave Emery is onto something and that understand that these radical Islamic groups that have sprung from the Muslim Brotherhood, which dates back to pre-World War II, is actually just Nazism with an Arabic gloss.
Mm-hmm.
If all of these things are just an Arabic form of the National Socialist Party, you know, the Nazis, if you accept his theory that the Underground Reich holds a lot of influence in American politics, it makes it easier to understand why guys like Grover Norquist of the American Taxpayers Union, or is that it, American Taxpayers Union? Grover Norquist, who's a big power broker inside the Republican Party, why he would actively defend and lobby on behalf of members of the Muslim Brotherhood, and why
Americans for Tax Reform.
Americans for Tax Reform, okay. Why the American government appears bent on putting Muslim Brotherhood-related or at least radical Islamic regimes in control.
Well, if you're
across
going
the
to
Middle
go
East, even including Iraq, by the way.
If you're going Nazi hunting, many of the Nazi beliefs began here.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're going to look at humans only.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to really understand what has taken place in the last 100, 150 years with regard to the Nazi Party and the roots thereof, you need to understand the spiritual aspect of
yes.
things like the Nazi Party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all in the anti-God category.
Mm-hmm. And so the powers and principalities appear to be aligning things for what looks like another assault on Israel and God's chosen people. And please note that I count those as separate entities, that the nation state of Israel, the political entity of Israel, is not equivalent to God's chosen people. But we do see pretty clearly in Scripture that God does hold a special, give special status to Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And so any attempt to wrest that from the nation state of Israel, I think, is going to be met with some pretty severe consequences.
Absolutely. Those who support Israel will be blessed. Those who oppose Israel will be cursed. I mean, mm-hmm. that's really what God said.
Yeah. And again, it's kind of walking a tightrope when we start talking this
and
way.
We're exactly.
Not
I know,
because we're trying to make everybody
Israel?
Happy, but
we're talking about the people.
That's right. God's chosen people.
Yes.
And again, not the nation state of Israel, because clearly there are things that the nation state does that cannot be defended in light of Scripture.
No, because they are not doing so
right.
With a love for, you know, Jehovah.
Mm-hmm.
They have turned their faces away from Jehovah
yeah.
long, long ago,
as
many leaders of countries across the world.
Mm-hmm.
No longer, even though they may claim to be divine or rule by divine right, they may be the head of the church even,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't mean that they really represent, you know, Jehovah God.
Hmm. So more stuff to keep an eye on regarding the Middle East. Just all sorts of political machinations and pieces being moved around on the chessboard. I don't think Israel's going to stand for another wave of, multiple, dozens of rockets a day being launched from Gaza into Israel, especially when they start hitting in places like Tel Aviv, which... not having lived in Israel or not being closely acquainted with anyone who does, it's a little difficult for me to understand. But apparently Tel Aviv is sort of considered, from what I've been reading, a sort of a safe haven inside Israel by the people who live there, a little bubble of normalcy,
mm-hmm.
Even when the missiles are raining down in the Negev or on the northern border from Hezbollah and Hamas. Tel Aviv has been kind of exempt from all of that, and recently, with the new longer-range missiles that Hamas has been getting, presumably from Iran,
mm-hmm.
Tel Aviv and Jerusalem are both within range now.
Well, I think we need to mention that the current campaign that I think is either at an end or is very close to being at an end, that the Israeli military has been waging, has been called in the West Pillar of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you really look at the local papers, it is referred to as Pillar of the Cloud.
Uh-huh. Which has some...
Old Testament meaning.
Old Testament, yes, meaning. Just go back and reread the book of Genesis.
And let me Exodus as well.
Yes.
And let me
Exodus,
just...
Exodus, correct.
Let me just say that I think one could make the case that if Pillar of the Cloud is the beginning And it may just be the beginning of what's happening in the Middle East, this cup of trembling that is being presented to the world to drink, that the pillar of fire may be following.
By the way, speaking of pillar of fire, that just brings to mind a report that I was looking up here while you were talking. A member of the House of Lords, Lord Gilbert, ironically enough, no relation, I assure you, on Friday, in a speech in the House of Lords, called for the British government to eliminate the issues that NATO forces have been having keeping the Afghanistan border controlled, the Afghan border with Pakistan, by dropping neutron bombs. He's advocating dropping neutron bombs on the Pakistani-Afghan border to eliminate the hiding places of insurgents. And to quote Lord Gilbert, at least as he's quoted in this article I'm reading, you would greatly reduce your problem of protecting those borders from infiltration from one side or another. Sure, by nuking them. Needless to say, the government...
I just have no response for
the
that.
The government of the UK did not respond favorably to that, to those views. But the fact that a member of their governing body, or legislative body, similar to the Senate in the United States, would openly call for dropping nukes on Pakistan is a bit startling, to say the least.
How long have we been going?
Oh, we've been going for about 40 minutes here. You've got plenty to keep going on here. Leon Panetta, of the United States Secretary of Defense and former CIA chief, now apparently getting ready to open the front on the drone wars a little wider.
A drone in every home.
That's right. He had said last year where he thought that the war against terror was close to wiping Al-Qaeda off the face of the earth. And then Benghazi happened. And so now they're back out after Spiny Norman. He said in a speech given at the Center for American Security, which is a defense think tank in Washington, D.C., that, quote, this campaign against Al-Qaeda will largely take place outside declared combat zones, using a small footprint approach that includes precision operations, partnered activities with foreign special operations forces, and capacity building so that partner countries can be more effective counter-China, blah, blah, blah. But precision operations basically is referring
to surgical
strikes with drones. Mm-hmm. So, and outside the declared zones of combat. Well, right now we're only officially committed in Afghanistan, but we've also got special forces on the ground in Congo or somewhere in Central Africa. We've been droning in Yemen and Somalia and Pakistan on a pretty regular basis. So Panetta now saying that apparently we need to widen this war to other places.
I don't know. Pretty soon it's going to be Battlestar Galactica.
Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, drones. They'll just become sentient and they'll start going after us.
Or like Eagle Eye, where the all-seeing government defense computer decides that anything that threatens American security, even if it's the president, needs to be taken out. But never fear. I mean, even though we are winding down the war in Afghanistan, we are still going to be there for a while. Apparently, the Pentagon is looking for ways to continue its anti-drug operations in Afghanistan. But since our troops are being withdrawn by 2014, pending the outcome of new negotiations that have begun with the Afghan government to keep our troops in Afghanistan even later. The Defense Department Pentagon wants to keep the drug war going by using contractors. And in fact, there's a compound inside Kabul called Camp Integrity, which is not a U.S. military base. It's actually the 10-acre Afghanistan headquarters for the company formerly known as Blackwater. So the government is apparently looking to keep Blackwater in country to keep the traffic in heroin, you know, the opium poppies.
Spice must flow?
Under its control. Yeah. I don't think they're actually there to try to wipe things out. I think it's again, this is my cynical conspiratorial nature. I think we've got to keep these guys on the job so that we keep control over where that stuff is going.
Sandworms. You hate them? I hate them too.
Well, what else have we got here? NASA, this past week, during an interview with NPR, had a spokesman drop a big hint that perhaps something is coming.
Something major was discovered by a rover.
Yes, that Curiosity, the Mars rover, the Mars lander, has been testing soil and has capacity in its little onboard lab looking for organic compounds, you know, carbon-based compounds that are supposedly building blocks of life. And the chief scientist, John Grotzinger of Caltech, told NPR that this data is going to be one for the history books, end quote. There is a news conference that will take place on December 3rd in San Francisco, at which they will tell us exactly what they're talking about. Now, they've issued bombshells like this before, you know, bombshells in air quotes, mm-hmm. Like the one which had nothing to do with anything in outer space at all. It was the discovery of like a tube worm or something that was able to feed off of arsenic at around geothermal vents deep underwater. But even that turned out not to be such a big deal. They've done more digging and they think, oh, wait, they're not actually eating arsenic, which is poisonous and upon which no known life form can actually sustain itself. And they thought, well, this might be a clue that perhaps what we consider the building blocks of life might actually be totally wrong. Well, it turns out these things are actually processing phosphorus, not arsenic anyway. So, but we'll see and that kind of relates back to what I had talked about with Mike Heiser earlier. And it's why Mike Heiser's got a blog called UFO Religions. Because
how many blogs does he have?
All of them. Mike Heiser is every blog
the
is
king
Mike Heiser.
Of the blogs.
At least three that I know of. That plus Paleo Babble, which is about fringe archaeology, and then the Naked Bible, which is about studies in the textual criticism and analysis and so forth. By the way, he's also got a podcast which is really good called The Naked Bible, in which he goes through how to study the Bible, and he points out that most of us, self included, consider Bible study the 10 or 15 minutes a day that we spend just reading the Bible instead of actually studying it. He made a really good point in one of his recent podcasts. He said, you should read the Bible as though it's a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because he believes that...
that it's fiction.
That it's fiction. It's just that when you read it as fiction, when we read it as fiction, we tend to look a little deeper into the meanings behind or the reasons certain characters act in certain ways.
That's one approach, and it's probably a good approach for people who have never read the Bible ever.
And I'm not doing justice to his reasoning behind it. You know,
well,
Mike
then
being
people
who
will have to listen to the show.
That's right. Check out, check out his podcast as well.
And while you're mentioning that, I want to make sure that we also let everybody know about the Future Congress 2 meeting that will be happening in Dallas on January 4th through the 6th of 2013. And the reason, of course, that David Hitt, who is organizing this event, chose to wait until after the 2012 event, because he could have had it this past summer.
Sure.
But he decided to wait because he honestly, as we do, believes that this is not a major milestone in God's prophetic timeline, that there are many things to come, and we will still be here in January of 2013. And at that point, I think that especially New Agers are going to be sitting and wondering, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't anything happen?
Yeah.
Now, it's possible something will happen,
mm-hmm.
but it's not anything that I can see prophetically foretold in Scripture.
That can be specifically tied to a
to the Mayan prophecies.
The Mayan prophecies,
exactly.
Right.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But Future Congress 2, the discount, if you are an early bird registrant, goes away the end of this month. So on December 1st, you have to pay the full price. So if you are considering going, go to their website right now, futurecongress.com.
com.
Com. And I want to make sure it's com and not orgy.
I'm looking at it. It is .com.
Oh, okay. Futurecongress.com. And hit the, do they call it register now? Yes, register button and fill it out to save $39.
Well, let me take a look here. I hadn't paid attention to the discount.
It is $129 versus $99.
Right. $30 discount if you register by December 1st. So, but yeah, Mike Heiser's presentations look really interesting, especially considering that this is taking place a couple of weeks after December 21st. Mm-hmm. He's got three. What you know may not be so. How biblical prophecy is unclear and why. Specifically, why didn't the world end on December 21st? And why didn't 2012 predictions of Christian prophecy researchers pan out?
That is going to be awesome. Yeah. You and I originally had planned on being there. So if you haven't listened to PID Radio for a while or haven't looked at our websites, we are not going to be there. And honestly, it's because we don't feel called to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have to be at every event. Isn't about you and me. It's about doing what God calls us to do. And there are lots of other people who have been called to go to this event.
Right.
We're sitting this one out because that's what we're supposed to do.
Right.
But 40 plus speakers, more than 40 speakers, more than 100 mm-hmm. workshops. So if you don't find something to do in Dallas during those 3 days, I don't know where, you know, yeah. where your brain is.
And the DVDs, which we're told will be available afterward, will be awesome. I mean, when you get speakers like Mike Heiser, Gary Stearman, Hal Lindsey, Russ Dizdar, L.A. Marzulli, Bill Salas, Rob Skiba, Doug Woodward, Dr. Future, J. Michael Bennett, Guy Malone, Doc Marquis, Dr. Judd Burton, your friendly neighborhood PhD, Ray Gano, Peter Goodgame coming in from Hawaii for this, mm-hmm. Doug Hamp, Mike Hoggard, Aaron Judkins, David W. Lowe. It would have been wonderful to have met all of these folks.
The fellowship would have been
amazing.
Really,
yes.
really amazing. But just because we're not going to be there doesn't mean that
you can't
absolutely.
Be there. Yeah, and should probably, in fact, make a point of doing that if you're anywhere near. So, and again, futurecongress.com is the link to get all the
and
information
about
that.
And the venue is gorgeous.
Yeah, Hyatt Regency in Dallas. So considering that... Yeah. I mean, it's going to be an awesome weekend, and so much to do there. You probably could go three straight days without sleep and still only scratch the surface.
And you may.
Yeah. So what else? Speaking. The Pope Benedict issued some thoughts on the end
of
the world
Christ.
Prophecies.
Oh, sorry.
Well, that too. We can talk about that as well. But Pope Benedict was talking about the doomsday theory predictions that the world will end December 21st. Reassured Catholics that the end of the world is not nigh, and that they should ignore claims that December 21st will be doomsday. This was part of his weekly radio address from the window of his Vatican apartments. But he took it a little farther. Took it a little farther than just saying, don't pay attention to the Mayan doomsday prophecies because they're bunk. He said, quote, Jesus does not describe the end of the world, and when he uses apocalyptic images, he is not acting the prophet. On the contrary, he wants to stop his disciples of every epoch from being curious over dates forecast and wants to give them the key to the right road to walk today and tomorrow to enter into the eternal life. Well, that part is true as far as it goes, but when Jesus is using apocalyptic imagery, I'm sorry, he is acting the prophet.
Yes, as in the prophet.
Yes, he is, in fact, describing the end of the world. Although you cannot say, you have to take that in context with his other statement that no man knows the day or the hour.
That's true. But this is coming from a pope who is also on record writing a book to children about the Star of Bethlehem saying that it probably wasn't even in Bethlehem where he was born. Even though scripture is clear that he was born in Bethlehem, the pope said it was probably Nazareth.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody who's really studied this is too upset with the concept that Jesus was probably born in 2 BC, 4 BC, somewhere there, because the calendar was changed during the Middle Ages. So that statement that Jesus was born several years before zero, year zero.
There is no year zero.
Yeah, exactly. Or 1 BC, 1 AD. That's fine. I mean, there's no problem with that. But if you'd stop there, if you just stop there, but taking it a step further and saying, no, it was really Nazareth. That's wrong. How about some cryptid stuff?
Cryptid?
Cryptid. A strange Muppet-like beast discovered in Namibia. Hunters there being led by native guides came across a thing that looks like something from a Muppet film. This is per the Daily Telegraph, so this isn't coming from some fringe news site. Just reported about a week ago, actually, November 19th. The creature spotted apparently foraging for food. One of the shooting party wounded it. They tracked it to a nearby lair where they found three more creatures the same size. The wounded one attacked and was shot dead. The others escaped into the brush. Apparently, the body's been taken to a police headquarters where a full forensics investigation is underway, end quote. Now, that was, again, over a week ago, so I don't know if we'll hear more about this.
How big is this cryptid?
It looks like it's, in the photos, being held with one hand.
Okay.
So I would say dachshund-sized at most.
They found the ancient lair of the original dachshund.
Yeah, so don't know what this thing is. And I'll put a link to this in the show notes at pidradio.com so you can take a look at the picture yourself. It sounds like a jackalope story.
Yeah.
Or, a flabbit, which is, the rabbit with wings.
But, that's a new one for me. Must be a Chicago thing.
No. Australian, I think. It's kind of an odd little thing.
Well, it sounds like a good thing to end the show on.
Well,
cryptids.
Yeah. I think there are other things we can get to here, but nothing that's of any real... just checking my notes here. Nothing of any real grave import. But again, don't be dismayed or alarmed.
Is that like flabbit?
Yeah. Over what is to come, because we've been warned in advance that there are things that are coming that are not pleasant. But ultimately, you read the end of the book and you know who wins.
Amen.
So, VFTB.net, check out the interview with Dr. Mike Heiser. And until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear.